This is KVLU-LPN Logan. My name is Richard Arlen Blake, and I'd like to welcome you all back to my next episode of Balladish-ish, Folklore Now. In this episode, I do want to go into an area that is really fascinates me, and I have generally kind of glossed over it in many episodes, but I want to specifically zero in on this concept right now so that you can get my ideas on the subject. And of course, the subject is ghost stories. I have talked a lot about ghost stories, but I have read a lot of ghost stories and explained a lot of things about ghost stories that I had encountered and what I thought about them. But I haven't actually analyzed ghost stories per se in these particular topics. But before I go to that, I wanted to talk about an event that took place here in Cache Valley in Utah. That is called Tunnel Tales. In the Cache Valley, there's a Cache Valley Storytelling Festival that it usually happens twice a year. What they do is they get some storytellers who will come and tell stories that are either about themselves or about other things that they feel are really interesting or important. Sometimes they bring out really famous storytellers when they come there. It's interesting the way they go out and they present them. They are better storytellers than I am, of course, because I don't have a huge lot of practice. As you've seen when I have talked some stories with you here, you can probably tell when I was either telling a story as opposed to when I was reading you something that I had found that I thought was of interest. Besides storytelling, of course, there was some music playing as well. And the music was really nice. Folk musicians always tend to be really talented in their art. They a lot of times learn their trade when they just pick up an instrument and start playing it. A folk musician, by definition, is an ear musician when they are playing an instrument. As for singing a cappella or having someone else doing music in the background, that's a completely different story, but the a cappella talent is really something miraculous as well, because you really have to have a good voice so you could carry things so that it doesn't sound dull and drab because you have no music behind you. Some a cappella singers are very, very good. The one that was singing at this event was playing a guitar, so he wasn't a cappella. I really enjoyed this particular festival. Unfortunately, I had to leave a little bit early for personal reasons, and the place that they had it was actually under a tunnel. We were actually in a tunnel under a road in a park in Logan, and that really gave it a interesting atmosphere, especially when the sun started going down and the people there were all hunched together. We were supposed to bring our own chairs and everything, but alas, I forgot to bring a chair, so I had to sit on the concrete, but it was still nice, and I was able to videotape some of it, but you can only videotape such minimal amount of quality when you're just using one of your phones. Even a really high-tech phone gives you limited video quality, at least the kind that I'm able to get my hands on. So anyways, local folk tale storytelling festivals, they are always worth going and looking into, because only when you actually experience the storyteller can you really appreciate it. The idea of storytelling to a lot of people is just, oh, a guy's just going up there and blabbing away, anybody can do it. And I want to make sure you understand, no, anybody cannot do it. It's a great deal of skill. Some people do have a natural talent that might put them above others, but these people are obviously well practiced, and when they go and they tell their stories, they can bring things to life a lot easier than if you're just sitting there at a barbershop telling the person next to you what your day was like. Always check out your local festivals and your local folk traditions, because they are always worthy of your attention. Now, let's get ourselves over to my main theme today, and that is ghosts. When talking about ghosts, one of my favorite places to go is with ghosts and the sea. We always hear about ghost stories happening about haunted houses or places out in the fields or battlefields where you see ghostly battles taking place that have never ended since the Civil War, those kinds of things. At sea, there are also ghosts that pop up here and there. One of the most famous examples, of course, would be that of the Flying Dutchman. Depending on who you are looking at, Flying Dutchman is actually the name of a captain who had control of a ship. This is contrary to the Disney version where the Flying Dutchman was a ship. The actual ship, nobody knows what the name of it was. Flying Dutchman, though, refers simply to the captain of a ship who, though warned by God to turn around because he was about to be destroyed by the sea, the Dutchman cursed God and said that he would make it around that cape if it takes until Judgment Day. And then, of course, God ends up cursing him, so that making it so that he cannot circle the Cape of Good Hope until Judgment Day, or if he should ever make it around there, he would be released from this curse. But basically, it says that he's stuck to endlessly circle around and around and never quite crossing the Cape of Good Hope and releasing himself and his poor crew members from the horror that they have been stuck in, going through storms and all kinds of things at sea as a result. There are many other kinds of ghost stories on the sea as well. But first, what I'm going to talk about is I'm going to go back to one particular story that I had discussed in the second episode. There I told you a story about a ship that had, the ship named the Charles Haskell, that during a storm it rammed into the side of another ship named the Andrew Johnston or Jackson, depending on who you ask. Because the ship had smashed into the Johnston, sending it to the bottom, the next time the Haskell came through those waters, it found itself boarded by the ghosts, the dead spirits of the sailors who had drowned because of the Charles Haskell. Then what I did is I played you a song that actually sang about that particular event. It's interesting when something that's considered a historical event and involves a ghost and they make a song out of it, it can kind of morph off into many different forms. The original version, of course, is to give you a kind of sorrowful, sad, or creepy kind of feeling about what happened to this particular narrator while he was on board the Charles Haskell. But what I'm about to play to you is going to show you the kind of diversity that one can get when it deals with folk music and what people end up doing with songs when they pick up someone else's song. Because this particular version of the song is not quite as solemn, and you will also find it kind of interesting the way they decided to sing this, or the way that the singer decides to do this and what he accompanies it with. So I'm going to play you this song. This version is by Alan Mills. And then we will discuss it before moving on to the next topic, because this song I have talked about a bit already. But this is the song that I actually did my graduate thesis on, and so it has a little bit of a special place in my heart, I guess you could say.
I'll smile if you want to, but perhaps you'll lend an ear. For men and boys together, well on for 50 years. I've sailed upon the ocean in summer's pleasant days, and through the stormy winter when the howling winds do rage. I've been tossed about on George's shoals, been fishing in the bay. Down south in early seasons, most anywhere would pay. I've been in different vessels on the western banks and grand. I've been in herring vessels that went to Newfoundland. There I saw storms, I tell ya, when things looked rather blue. But somehow I was always quite lucky and got through. I will not brag, however, I won't say much, but then I'm not much easier frightened than most of other men. Last night as we were sailing, we were offshore away. I never will forget it, in all my mortal days. 'Twas in the grand dog watches I felt a thrill and dread came over me as if I heard one calling from the dead. Right over our rail there clambered, all silent, one by one, a dozen dripping sailors. Just wait till I am done. Their faces pale and sea-wan shone through the ghostly night. Each fellow took his station as if he had a right. They moved about before us till land was most in sight. Or rather, I should say so, the lighthouse shone its light. And then those ghostly sailors moved to the rail again and vanished in an instant before the sons of men. We sailed right in the harbor, and every mother's son will tell you the same story, the same as I have done. The trip before the other, we were on George's then. We ran down another vessel and sank her and her men. These were the same poor fellows, I hope God rest their souls, that our old craft ran over and sank on George's shores. So now you have my story, it is just as I say. I do believe in spirits until this very day.
So when you hear this version of the song, what is it that comes to your mind? Are you thinking of a tragic event that happened where a ship went down and then these ghosts came and haunted the ship that sank it? Does it seem like it's a tragic, horrible event? Or does this accordion and this way that Mills is singing and everything, does it kind of sound more like circus music or more of a carnival than actually someone reflecting on a horrible event that happened? That's essentially the impression that I got when I first heard this version of the song. So when I played the version that I played you before was by Mark Allen Lovewell, and he played the guitar when he was singing the song. And you have to admit that the singer there seems to have a really sad, reflective look or scary experience. And he says, well, you might mock at this, but this is what really happened. And within my 50 years of sailing, this is the worst experience that I've ever had in my life. Now, not every version of this song actually says that it's the worst experience that they had. One version of the song says that in all his 50 years he had, you know, this is one of the weirdest experiences he had. But then in another version it says 40 years. And then, of course, in some versions it tells you what season it was that it took place. The historical record, as it is written by a music collector, her name was Helen Creighton, and she was big on collecting lots of ballads and everywhere, but she also wrote a book where it tells a bunch of ghost stories and historical events. And essentially she said that in March in 1866 the Charles Haskell had sailed out and all that stuff. So actually it says in March this is what happened, but in one of the versions of the song it says September. And to be honest, September is actually more along the lines of the hurricane season than March is. But not everyone agrees that the experience necessarily was with an actual hurricane. Hurricanes up in that area, the Canadian New England area, are very rare, but they do happen. So it's up to you what you want to get out of it and what you think. some versions of the song, the audio version, truly do bring out a kind of reflective sadness, and I feel like that's probably the best impression that someone should get from the song, and not this kind of circus carnival atmosphere. Like many other maritime stories, if we want to just go to the story itself, like we pull up Helen Creighton's actual historical record, as it's called, then we'll see that it's similar to a lot of other things that fit within the maritime ghost lore, I guess I should call it. With ghost ships, there are essentially three different versions or types of ghost ships that you read about or that you come across when you are looking into ghost stories and maritime experiences, things that sailors have that they cannot explain in any other way. Some might say that sailors are by nature really superstitious, but to be more on the friendly side as far as that goes, let's just say that they are more sensible to potential supernatural things when going out and seeing the world from the viewpoint of the ocean. The three types of ghost ships are the ones like the Flying Dutchman, well, the one like the Ship of the Flying Dutchman, where the ship is actually a phantom ship. In other words, it's something that can appear out of nowhere and then it vanishes just as mysteriously. And people have no idea what the heck just happened, or if they know it's the Flying Dutchman, sometimes that's a preliminary to a disaster or tragedy coming up. If a sailor sees the Flying Dutchman, they might be really terrified and want to get to port as quickly as possible, lest something terrible happens to them. Another kind of ghost ship is like the one with the Charles Haskell. Well, kind of indirectly like the Charles Haskell, because this kind of ship is essentially a haunted ship. One of the more famous ones that people have heard about is the Queen Mary that is docked down in Los Angeles. And actually, it is currently a hotel and restaurant, and for some reason people like to go there despite the fact that it's purported to be haunted. The Charles Haskell is similar to this in that the sailors do haunt the ship, but only during certain parts of the day and only when the ship is within George's Bank. You can just kind of see that as maybe a side comparison with a ship like the Queen Mary. Now, the Mary Celeste, it's the third kind of ghost ship that you can come across in the stories out there. In this particular case, you come across this ship. It is completely empty of sailors. It's sailing out in the middle of the ocean, but it's completely uninhabited. In the case of the Mary Celeste, it was sitting there adrift out in the middle of the ocean. People don't know exactly how long it had been there since people had known that there were those inhabiting it. The people who boarded the ship essentially noticed that, okay, there's nobody here, but it looks like this person was eating a dinner and he was suddenly interrupted, or they saw that this particular person had been smoking a cigar out there and suddenly vanished. Something had totally distracted them and they had disappeared for some reason. Some people have said, oh my gosh, you know, maybe they were abducted by pirates, or maybe they had to abandon ship because there was a horrible storm coming, and therefore they thought the ship was going down, but their ship actually didn't go down. Considering what they found on the ship, there's no way that these people would have abandoned the ship and left a lot of the prized possessions that were on that ship that were owned by the crew of that ship. There are other ship examples like this. It's kind of creepy to a lot of sailors, the people who have basic ideas, superstitions, if you will, about, oh my gosh, what does this mean when there's nobody on board? When the Mary Celeste was taken into Gibraltar and the people wanted to salvage it, the people in Gibraltar were just suspicious, saying, oh, these people have to be pirates. They must have done horrible things to the crew and blah, blah, blah. Of course, there was no evidence of it. And so what they ended up doing was giving them a very minimal amount of salvage rights for the contents of this ship. And of course, the people there weren't happy about it. But who's going to believe that, oh, I just found this ship wandering around in the middle of the ocean with nobody on board? You know, but there was no evidence that any foul play happened there. So that is essentially one of the unexpected things that this particular kind of ghost ship brings to the stories that we collect and the stories that we like to hear about. So the next area, now that I'm kind of done talking about ghost ships for the time being, I might end up talking about a specific one here in the future. I'm not sure if I will or not. I've already told you about a couple of ghost ships and what exactly the people who encountered those ships and the people who encountered the ghosts felt about it and how they reacted. I want to turn now around to things more on the land as opposed to the sea. I love the sea, but you know, there are more things out there than the ocean, even if it does cover over 70% of the planet's surface. What I want to start with now is by asking you, how many of you have actually picked up a book that talks about places that are inhabited by ghosts? So there are many of them out there. Sometimes one finds them in the nonfiction section. Sometimes it's found in the history section. And strangely enough, it can also be found in the travel section of a bookstore. Believe it or not, there are a lot of people out there who just love to go out and see things for themselves. We call them legend trippers, where they hear a story about a haunted place or about a horrible thing that happened in this place, or I saw this happen here. People called legend trippers just flock to these places. There are a couple lighthouses that fall into that category. There is a lighthouse that I think is in Michigan, and the name of it escapes me. If it comes to me, I'll let you know. I don't have time to dig it up right now. Essentially, a particular lighthouse was the Coast Guard had arranged to have it sitting up there to warn sailors about the hazards of this particular coast. For reasons I won't go into right now, the lighthouse, they decided that they were going to shut that one down. It had something to do with the location and the weather, and when storms hit, sometimes there's problems. They feared that the lighthouse was going to be knocked over. But they ended up building a lighthouse in a nearby location here in the Great Lakes. And the old lighthouse ended up being sold to a family to run as a kind of business venture. Eventually, they ended up building a kind of tourist attraction there, so that this particular lighthouse didn't confuse any sailors coming by there, because this is a unregistered, unlisted lighthouse on the Coast Guard's lists, and so they don't want sailors to be confused by seeing this light. And so they disconnected everything on this particular lighthouse so that there was no light shining. But sailors were coming around there, and they kept reporting that, what is this light that we're seeing here at this particular point? There's not supposed to be a light here. And the Coast Guard ends up calling up the family who runs it and says, hey, look, this light is not supposed to be turned on. This is confusing sailors. And the woman running the place at the time said, well, if you can tell me how it gets turned on in the first place, I'll be happy to turn it off for you, because this is kind of a ghost light that just suddenly appears unexpectedly out there, and it's visible throughout the darkness. The Coast Guard sent engineers up there, people to investigate it, look into it, check the electricity, the cables, and everything, and they could not figure out any reason why this particular lighthouse just keeps lighting up at night. So they just pretty much gave up on it and said, look, it's just the light, we can't do anything about it. When word of this got out, of course, I mean, that's part of the reason why that tourist thing really got booming, was because there's the ghost light there up in Lake Michigan, where no one knows why this light pops on and nobody can do anything about it. It's the ghost light. And of course, anytime you hear ghosts, you're going to have these legend trippers coming out that they want to see it for themselves. Who knows? Are some of them trying to debunk it, or are a lot of people just wanting to go out there to confirm what they already believe about something? Besides this ghost light, of course, there are places all over the world, like in England, in Britain, Ireland, where a lot of ghost stories are encountered as well. One of my favorite areas of looking for these particular ghosts are in the castles in Britain and Ireland. Barnes and Noble had a collection of books talking about haunted places in Britain and Ireland, and one of them was Haunted Castles of Britain and Ireland. There were several castles there that I had actually visited, and I was thinking, is the Tower of London really haunted? You know, these people who had suffered these horrific deaths, are they really inhabiting this particular area? And of course, I always show up there in the daytime. And so, unless it's like a dark room without any windows that are going to give you a much darker experience in that particular room, you probably aren't going to see a ghost until it gets dark, which is kind of sad because usually they kind of board the place up or close it, I guess I should just say, at night, and then they open it again. And so, unless you're a curator or someone who owns the place or who's part of a group who is allowed to go in there, you're not going to be seeing these particular ghosts. One of them was the Tower of London. There are lots of people who were murdered in that tower. A lot of people who are of royal ancestry, people who just got on the wrong side of the rulers or who were unlucky enough to come across someone who wants them knocked out. Killed off. Such a thing happened to King Edward II when his wife and his lover ended up killing him and taking over. Of course, the, was his name Montgomery, or it begins with an M. Anyways, when Edward III came to power, he decided, all right, I'm going to go take care of this guy myself. And so he goes and ends up killing his mother's lover, despite how much she pleaded to spare him. But it's like, well, you killed my father, so now you're going to die. You know, Edward III was considered one of the really great, powerful, strong rulers of England. One of the other places where I was that was supposedly haunted is the Caernarfon Castle in Wales. That is over on the northwestern coastal area there of Wales, that it's facing Anglesey Island, Ynysmon, Anglesey. Supposedly, one day someone was walking around those grounds in the early evening and they saw someone who was walking up on the higher parapets up there. And of course, this is a security guard, and he's thinking, what the heck? There's not supposed to be anybody up there. So he goes around and trying to find someone who can go check it out for them because they need to get rid of this person who's walking on the wall walk area there. Apparently, he encountered a tourist who happened to notice it as well. And so, okay, there's somebody up there. And a bunch of people got sent up there to find out who the heck this person was who is walking around the castle. And of course, they did not find anybody. The natural instinct of a lot of people is to say, ooh, it's a ghost. Maybe it's a ghost, maybe it's not, but people are uncertain as to what the identity of this particular ghost is. Ghosts like the wives of Henry VIII, who are said to haunted the Tower of London, or a lot of these people, they can actually put names to them when they're in the Tower of London. When you see these particular images, these particular people, you don't necessarily know who it is. I mean, it could be anybody. Somebody who died a horrific death, but there's no exact record of them, or the story is not carrying on until the present day. The third castle that I had been to that is purported to be haunted is Warwick Castle. Warwick Castle is a really large complex. There's the keep and the castle proper, there's a couple other buildings, and then there's like a humongous wall around this castle. If you know anything about the history of England, the Earl of Warwick, one of the Earls of Warwick, is purported to be the kingmaker. He's the one who helped to put Edward IV on the throne of England, But then when he was trying to arrange some marriage with a princess of France, Edward ends up going and marrying another woman. Warwick feels completely humiliated. He ends up suddenly changing sides and supporting Henry VI, who was kind of a king who didn't have all his mental faculties, and his queen was essentially running the place. This little battle went back and forth. Eventually, Edward IV did win this particular conflict, and Warwick ended up being executed. Then, what's interesting about Warwick is, not only is he purported to haunt Warwick Castle, but he's also supposed to haunt the Tower of London, and he's also supposed to haunt a couple other places in Warwickshire. And one has to wonder, okay, what's going on if the same ghost is supposed to be wandering around all of these different places that aren't really very close to each other? And people always have their ideas about where that comes from, how that is possible. And, you know, it's a ghost. He can go wherever he wants, right? And it's like, well, why did he become a ghost in the first place? And that, of course, brings up to the next part is, why do these specific people become ghosts while others don't? I did read an interesting article about this, and there were a couple books where I came across people's explanations about why this particular person is a ghost. Why do three of Henry VIII's wives wander the Tower of London, and a lot of other people who were executed there weren't? Pretty much what they try to say is that when people die horrific deaths, or when people die with something unfinished, or when people die and they have something unfinished, this could involve something like building a castle, or a mother who's running around screaming looking for her child. There's an instance where there's a woman who she's a ghost, and she's seen running through the hallway screaming, asking where her baby is. And so these people have unfinished business. As for people who die in complete terror, maybe they're ghosts and they don't know that they're dead, or any number of ideas that might come out there. But the people are stuck wondering about these particular buildings. And the people who go there, the people who visit these places, the ghosts are just a part of everyday life for them. Sometimes people see it and sometimes they don't. Some people scoff at it, saying, oh, they want to find ghosts, so they find ghosts. But then when you talk to some of them, they're saying, are you kidding? I've never believed in ghosts until I suddenly came across this experience. And so there's always the back and forth there. My personal opinion on the matter is, there's just a lot of things out there that we can't explain. Many people like me do believe that there are spirits out there. What exactly they are and where they come from is an uncertain thing. And so what I do is I take in the story that someone wants to tell me, and as I accept it and log it away, if I hear another version of that story, I'll log that away as well. Who am I to judge people about what they say they saw? Maybe they're making it up, maybe they're not. But regardless of the facts of everything, I do love to go out and collect ghost stories, hear the stories that people have to tell me about their experiences and what they've seen. Because to the folklorist, the story itself is the important thing, and not the supposed facts or inconsistencies or whatever it is that might be coming out of that story. I've heard a lot of people say, oh, how can you listen to that? This story has this, this, and this wrong with it. It can't possibly be true. And you say, well, so what? It's a good story. I like to hear the story. That doesn't mean I believe it. Ghost stories are like that. There are just so many other things that I could say about ghosts and talk about ghost stories here. But, of course, I don't have the time to just keep doing that here. On a later episode, I'm probably going to go into talking about ghosts and go into a little bit more analytical research mode on a few things, because, you know, I've pretty much told you a bunch of stories, ghost stories, the backgrounds behind the stories, because whenever you see a ghost, you want to know the story behind it. At another time, I might continue on this research into ghosts in general. The next couple episodes that I'm going to do, I might actually end up choosing one of the 50 states and just going in and pulling up a whole bunch of different folklore, folk traditions and things from that particular state. And if there happens to be a ghost in there, who knows, it might go in here. But all 50 states are relevant. And so I felt, well, I seem to be emphasizing places like Utah and maybe California and Idaho and Massachusetts and Maine and some places in Canada, but there are a lot of states that I'm kind of overlooking in this particular instance. And so I don't know if I'm going to actually have an episode for each of the 50 states. That would be rather fascinating if I could pull off 50 more episodes, one for each state, but we'll see how it goes. I'm not sure what state I'll use. It'll probably be either Washington or California or one of the East Coast states that I haven't brought any stories out of yet. But do appreciate all of you for coming and listening to this episode of Balladishanish. And as always, if you have anything that you'd like me to talk about or any stories that you have actually said and recorded or you have yourself recorded singing folk music, just pass it along to me. And if I think it's relevant, then I will play it on this particular podcast. As always, the email address is folklorenow33@gmail.com. Have a wonderful day and see you next time on the next episode of Balladishanish. Folklore Now.